From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter with this news. Alexandria Nixick has been in and out of prison for 7 years. Her most recent return home only lasted 16 days. But what might look like a failure from the outside is actually a key step toward success and recovery from alcohol misuse. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman has the story.
When Nixick was a kid in St. Michael, she learned some lessons pretty quickly.
With just violence being a part of growing up in my childhood, it was always my first instinct to react violently because I never knew any other way to express my emotions properly.
She says she saw some of the adults in her life using alcohol as a way to cope with their trauma from childhood. So she started doing the same thing.
Either numbing or enhancing my emotions, whether they were negative or positive, I'd always turn to alcohol to express my emotions.
By 18, Nixick was involved with the criminal justice system. For a few years, she moved between Anvil Mountain Correctional Center and her village, where she stayed with her family and her children. Eventually, she was sent to Highland Mountain, the women's prison in Eagle River, a huge change for her. There, she received intensive outpatient treatment for alcohol misuse.
I learned things that my parents didn't have a chance to learn, and it played a role with how I should be a better person.
Things like coping skills and ways to deal with her emotions. And then she was released. Nixick went back to St. Michael, back to her old friends and her old life. She says she was okay when she was with her children. They motivated her to stay sober. But when they left to stay with other family members?
When they weren't with me, I felt lost. Completely. Just lost. I didn't know what to do with myself when I didn't have my children around.
Nixick says she started hanging out with the same people as before, and she gave in to peer pressure to start drinking again.
It's hard to change when you're the only one who knows the steps to change and want to change, because those guys in St. Michael, they don't have the opportunity that I did. And I was very overwhelmed with the step up of showing them how to be there for them in the proper way that people were for me.
After 16 days, the state troopers took her back to Anvil Mountain. David Patterson Silverwolf, a professor of social work at Washington University in St. Louis, says Nixick's situation is common. He's worked as a treatment provider and a researcher.
Behavior change is hard, right? And it's really hard to do when you have people who are convincing you that you don't need to change.
Patterson Silverwolf is also a person in recovery. He says having a support system of people who understand the changes you're trying to make is essential.
I had these routines of using alcohol and drugs and doing those things. I had to reinvent my whole self, which required that I had to make new friends and go to another community and oftentimes avoid the community where I gave in, where it was easy to give in.
He says he also needed hope and motivation for change. Finding new people to hang out with is easier said than done in a village of 400. But Nixick said that her brief trip back to her village this summer actually gave her hope that she could do that.
With the time that I was home, I learned who to avoid and who I was most vulnerable against when it came to questioning on whether I wanted to party with them or not.
She says the experience was a reality check for what she needs to do in the future.
I not only hurt myself or my parents, but I hurt my son, and that hurts me the most because the look in his eyes when the troopers came to pick me up again is still tearing at my heart. He still questions on why I had to come back to jail.
Now, Nixick is heading to a long-term residential treatment program where she can stay with her son. She says she's ready to focus on her sobriety and prepare herself to return home. She has plans for her future in St. Michael. She's going to care for her parents and open a restaurant. And she's going to be the mother that her children need. For the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Do Juno mom Mara Jennings says she was over the moon when she found out Norah Jones was playing a concert in Juno. Over the years, she's sung the 9-time Grammy Award winner's songs, like lullabies, to her kids at night.
Come away with me in the night. Come away with me and I will write you a song.
Yeah, moms get emotional about the songs they sing to their babies growing up. I absolutely love her. I actually cried a bunch on Friday.
That was February 1st when the tickets went for sale online through Ticketfly. Jennings had an account ready and an alarm set to buy tickets, but they immediately appeared sold out. Face value tickets started at about $60. She found tickets on other websites of ticket resellers, also commonly known as scalpers, with huge markups she can't afford, up to $585 each. So why do the prices get so high? I'm Jeremy Shea, and this is a Cranky Curious Juno. First off, Norah Jones's team, the concert promoter, and the ticket vendor all declined or didn't respond to requests for comment. But I did find someone with years and years of experience with events and ticketing in Juno.
My name's Nancy DeTourney. I'm the Juno Arts and Humanities Council Executive Director.
She also oversees Centennial Hall, which Norah Jones booked for her upcoming concert in July. How big a deal is Norah Jones for Juno?
Apparently pretty big.
How do you know that?
Well, people seem pretty upset that they didn't get tickets. Yeah, it was caused quite a stir. You know, it's a small venue, for heaven's sakes.
To be clear, the Arts Council wasn't responsible for the Norah Jones ticket sales, but as the manager of the concert venue, it was given access to an early, limited sale for its members. Similarly, full disclosure, Jones's team gave KTOO members access to the same early sale after buying promotional underwriting. The attorney says professional ticket reselling is rare in Juno. She can remember one notable case.
One of my first years doing wearable art, a young man came in and bought more wearable art tickets than necessary and sold them on eBay.
But, you think that worked out for him?
I don't know about that. I mean, it's a small town, and so we all knew who it was. You know what I mean?
At its core, the high prices are an indication of a supply and demand imbalance. Too many buyers for too few tickets. Mara Jennings suspects pros may have inflated the Norah Jones demand.
Well, my message to Ticketfly would be that I think it would be a step of good faith for them to research the ticket sales for this event and see if someone has purchased an unusually large number of tickets.
The attorney says event organizers and ticket vendors like Vendini, which her organization uses, have a bunch of common ways to combat third-party sellers. Cap how many tickets each buyer can get. Make the tickets non-transferable, reserve some tickets to sell at the door. Grumpy consumers probably don't have a legal recourse. A State Department of Law spokesperson says there's nothing on the books about ticket reselling. But many states have tried to legislate remedies. New York, for example, outlaws software-assisted mass buys and requires ticket resellers get licensed and bonded, which is secondary market stuff. Before tickets get there, performers do have a supply-side lever of their own, which Norah Jones has been using. Initially, she only had one concert in Anchorage lined up, but twice this month already, she's announced additional shows there. And, hint hint, nudge nudge, Norah Jones' tour schedule has a few buffer days on either side of her show in Juno.
I will be hopeful that I will be able to find a way to go enjoy her music live.
That's it for this Curious Juno. Have your own question? Submit it. Subscribe to the Curious Juno podcast and catch up on past curiosities at ktoo.org/curious. In Juno, I'm Jeremy Shea.
And that's the latest from the KTOO newsroom. For more local and state news, go to ktoo.org. I'm Adeline Baxter.